Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Short Term Show. Before we get to today's guest, I'm going to give you a disclaimer that I've been sick, so I apologize if my voice annoys you. It's annoying me more than it's annoying you. Also, wanted to let you guys know, for you real estate agents out there, we are hiring in several markets. We're hiring in Myrtle Beach, Orlando, and also the Smoky Mountains, which we're almost never hiring in the Smokies. So if you guys are local to those markets, email us at careers@theshorttermshop.com. We'd love to hear from you. Now, on to today's guest, who I'm very excited to talk to. She is a middle school biology teacher turned real estate investor. Her name is Laura Sides. Hi, Laura. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Avery. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So will you start off just by telling us a little bit about your background, what you were doing before real estate, and how you got into real estate?
So I was a biology major in college and graduated from there and ended up teaching middle school biology. And I love the teamwork approach from that, but I really was just bored in the day to day. And then my husband and I did that for like 4 years. My husband and I had our first baby, and we decided it was a great fit for me to stay home. I am a huge extrovert. So as much as I love being home with my kids, because we ended up having two more after that, I just really missed interacting with adults and people and bringing in an income too. And we went on vacation in 2021, and I brought Rich Dad, Poor Dad down with me. And I got like three chapters into that book, and I was like, babe, there's a whole nother world out here. Like, wow. So within 2 months of starting that book, I bought my first house to flip, and the rest has just been an incredible journey.
I have to stop you at, I'm an extrovert, so I need people, because I'm the exact opposite of that. So that is a really foreign thing for my brain to grasp.
That's funny. So is my husband. It's like opposites attract.
Yeah, my husband is definitely the extrovert in our relationship. Okay, so let's start with the middle school biology thing. Another thing too is I just have so much respect for people who can be teachers, because I just would be an overstimulated witch by lunch. And so I really, really appreciate those who give their time to educating our kids. Y'all do not get paid enough by any stretch of the imagination. So I think that's really cool. And I have a lot of respect for that you were a biology teacher. But on the flip side of that, we know that teachers don't really get paid that much. So what I really want to hear about your story is how you were able to get over that hurdle of getting the first property, knowing that, you know, teachers aren't making $500,000 a year. I think our audience would really love to hear about that.
Yeah. So what's interesting is I was in one of the top rated districts in the state of Pennsylvania, where I'm from, an incredible district. You know, the interview went great. My husband is the director of IT for a construction management company. And by all typical accounts, we had made it, right? Like, I was in the great district. He had a great W-2 job. And we were both kind of like, wait, is this it? We're 30. Is this the rest? Like, I was making $40,000 a year, I think, and getting my master's. And then we're like, is there something else behind this? So, my husband is really kind of the original mastermind of all this, because our lifestyle was ultra affordable. So we went into it thinking like, let's just try and live off of one person's salary. So we bought a house that was a foreclosure and a fixer upper. And this is before we knew anything about real estate or, you know, equity or anything like that. And then, with my teacher's salary and then stopping to stay home with kids, I didn't have any type of income. And, reading Rich Dad Poor Dad opened my eyes to the world of equity in your house and taking that money that is yours that you have access to and putting it to work.
That can be a really, really great way to get started. So how much equity did you have to take out of your house to get started on your first project?
So our first the house that we live in now, still our primary, we took at that time, the first rent real estate investing that we got into, we took $100,000 HELOC out on our property. And we used that for our first flip. And when we made, within 6 weeks, we made $100,000 on that flip. And we're thinking like, all right, so this money doesn't really feel like ours. And how do we take this profit and put it into something that is going to be a recurring income and make more money? And short-term rentals is what came up, right? So we bought our first short-term rental, fully renovated that property. And then that was what we took, that $100,000, put it into this house as the down payment and the renovation costs and furnishing and all of that. And I didn't know anything about short-term rentals. So we actually put a big property manager in place at that time. And we kind of like set it and forget it. And then that started making money. So that to us felt like truly putting our money to work.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So we'll get to the manager in a minute. I'm still on the HELOC. So, cause I've seen a lot of people mess this up and you did not mess this up. So I want to really dive into this.
Short Term Shop Plus has live and recorded sessions on the following topics: creating compelling listings, marketing your STR property, setting up a new listing, managing from a distance, finding and acquiring your first or next STR, live revenue management audits with the pros, analyzing an STR for gross revenue. All of this and much, much more is now available at your fingertips with Short Term Shop Plus. Everything you need to know to have success in the world of vacation homes and STR. Please join us at stsconsultation.com. That's stsplus.com or stsconsultation.com to learn more.
I've seen a lot of people just use a HELOC to buy a property and then not necessarily be able to pay the HELOC payment with the property because, you know, I've seen people take several $100,000 HELOCs and not put that into their analysis of their short-term rental income, that it's basically like an entire extra mortgage worth of a payment. And then they get down the road and they're like posting great income numbers. The gross income's great, but they're like, oh, I'm losing money. And it's because, well, you have this gigantic HELOC. So how did you avoid getting into that situation by using that HELOC? So, and I will disclaim, like I did that on my second property. We took a $20,000 HELOC out of our primary home. But for me, that there was a lot more than $20,000 in equity. So we just didn't take the whole thing. So we felt okay about taking some, but I'd like to hear your side of it.
Such a great point. And I get that question a lot. Like, do you use a HELOC? And this is just me personally, because there's a lot of ways to do it. But I get the question a lot is, do we use a HELOC as a down payment for a short-term rental? And the answer for me is no, not at all. I will use the HELOC very quickly to invest in a flip or multiple flips. And I will, you know, invest all that money, flip the house, pay the HELOC back off, and put that money in a savings account temporarily until I have enough money to buy another short-term rental. So my down payment is coming from all cash reserves. And then we do take a mortgage on the short-term rentals, obviously. But then, like you're saying, all my calculations are based on just that one mortgage. I'm afraid of, if I were to put my HELOC as the down payment and then take a mortgage, now I have two mortgages and my primary house is on the line. And another great thing that that has lended itself for is we have two short-term rentals now that we've used that model for, flipped for the down payment, renovations, and furnishings. So then basically the only debt that we have when we get into the short-term rental is that mortgage on the property. So we're not carrying over any furnishing debt or anything like that. And that makes it a lot more easier to budget for and makes it profitable. And then it's not as scary with all these mortgages. And then what we do is we pull HELOCs on both of those short-term rentals. So we're getting that money back out and we can reinvest that in other flips. So, you know, the HELOCs on the short-term rentals helps too. So you're kind of getting paid on the back end.
Gotcha. So what I'm hearing you say is you're not using the HELOCs for any long-term stuff. You're only using the HELOCs to pay for short-term flips. Then you pay the HELOC back off real quick and then use the extra to save for down payments.
Yep. So it's like cash reserves. Yes.
I love that. I love the guys. I really hope y'all listen to that because I see the biggest mistake that I see is people over HELOCing. And I love that she's found a way to use it to invest in flipping which is a very short-term play in the real estate world, and then pay it back off and save money on what's left over on those flips for her down payments. And in the meantime, she can keep reusing that HELOC for more flips and more flips and keep paying it off and then using it again. So I think that's a really, really wise use of the HELOCs. And I'm really, really glad that you shared that with us. So thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a great way to have that extra cash. And then you kind of feel like, because we do flips so fast, we're looking at like 6 weeks, and you just don't feel like it's your money. And then also, if you're flipping, like you're saying, Avery, it's just the short-term gain, and then you have to flip again for more money and flip again. So we've taken that money and put it into, and a lot of people are like, well, why don't you hold the flips? Well, the flips are close to our house, which is, you know, in the suburbs of Philadelphia, not, and the return on those wouldn't, like as a long-term rental here, would be a couple hundred dollars a month. And that's not interesting to us. So we're like, let's sell this, buy a short-term rental where our profits are, you know, exponentially higher than what you would get in a long-term rental scenario here.
Awesome. I love it. Love everything about it so far. So where are your short-term rentals? Let's start there.
We have one in Bethany Beach, Delaware, and one in Ocean Pines, Maryland. So they're both beach towns on the East Coast.
Oh, I love when guests come on that have stuff in markets that I know absolutely nothing about. Because I feel like people are tired of hearing about the same markets over and over that I invest in. So love that. Okay. How did you choose those two markets?
So originally, I didn't know a thing. Like going into all of this, I had absolutely no real estate background whatsoever. And the whole reason that I even believed that I could do it, besides the couple chapters in Rich Dad Poor Dad, was following accounts like yours on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And hearing that other normal people do this, and you don't have to be this super experienced, you know, have family members in real estate or anything like that. So it was super inspiring to me to get into that. And I chose those markets because our family likes to vacation there. So it was they're like 3 hours from our house. And I was like, all right, the flips are fun and exciting temporarily, but we're real big in involving our three young kids and my husband, and like, all right, how can we get a vacation home for ourselves that essentially pays for itself and has incredible appreciation?
All right. Love it. And I used to completely disagree with buy something where you want to vacation. I used to be just, oh, cash flow, cash flow, cash flow, buy the cheapest thing that's going to make the most amount of money. But the longer that I'm in, the more I realize that cash flow is kind of secondary, not cash flow, sorry. The numbers are kind of secondary to understanding your market in terms of what's the most valuable and choosing a place to invest. If you don't understand a market as a tourist yourself, you're going to have a hard time making the right decisions on the right properties to buy as an investor, because sometimes the numbers can look really good in a certain area because the properties are cheaper than in another part of that market, when really it's not a desirable area for tourists in that area. And that's why they're cheaper. So I love the strategy so far. So what do the purchase prices look like on these properties in these markets?
The first one's incredible. And so we were flipping our first house, and the owner's friend came up to me and said, are you flipping this house? And I was like, I am. You know, are you buying this? And I said, I am. He goes, I have a house for you. And I'm like, oh, okay, go on. And he goes, it's 3 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, 10 minutes outside of Bethany Beach, which is a super popular town, on an acre behind a little goat farm. And I'm thinking in my head, there's no way I can afford whatever he's about to say. Like, I'm going to ask him, but there's no way. And I go, what do you think you want for it? And he said, $200,000.
Whoa, what year was this?
2021.
Oh, wow.
And wow. So our interest rate is 2.9.
Oh, goodness.
On, you know, and the property obviously is probably worth upwards of $600,000 today. So, and we renovated, it wasn't terrible. It was just granny-esque, which is my specialty. So we renovated the whole house and we turned it into a short-term rental, which I really truly knew nothing about. It just kind of fell in our laps, and we put a property manager in place there, and that was great. So the second property that we bought, the purchase price there was, it's right on the water. It's a cute A-frame. It's 4 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms. Two of them are like master suites. And that one, the purchase price was $605. And that was still great for that area. So
that's awesome. So how good of a deal? I don't know anything about these areas. So how good of a deal was that $200,000? Like, was that like a little better than market value? Is that what properties cost around there? Or did he just really want way less than market on it?
It's a unique property. And I think a lot of people at the time in 2021 probably would have overlooked the potential for that property just because of where it's situated, a little bit off the beaten path, but it's incredible. And I think we're probably under, he probably gave us a $100,000 discount on what at the time it was worth because of the work that it needed. And you know, what's interesting is he didn't like it. It was an older man and his dream was to retire there. But what he didn't like about it was that they were building luxury beach communities in the area, hand over fist. Like the development there is insane. So he didn't like that. And for me, I saw the incredible potential.
This episode of The Short-Term Show is brought to you by The Short-Term Shop. If you're interested in buying a short-term rental in one of the top vacation markets in America, just go to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected with an Agent. If you purchase a home with the shop, you'll have access to all of our client-only benefits, such as training on how to manage your short-term rental. So we'll teach you everything you need to know, from how to set up your Airbnb and Vrbo listings, to how to use the property management software that you'll need to streamline your business, all the way down to helping you source your local boots on the ground, like cleaners, handy people, etc. We've taught thousands of people just like you how to buy and manage their vacation homes from anywhere in the world. So head on over to theshorttermshop.com and click Get Connected with an Agent to get started. I do have to mention that we're brokered by eXp or else I get in trouble. We'll see you guys over there.
Are you having trouble trying to decide which market to buy in? No problem. That's just one of the many live sessions we offer in Short Term Shop Plus. Everything you need to know about buying and managing short-term rentals from anywhere in the world, right at your fingertips. You'll also get early access to our world-famous Management Monday sessions, live each and every Monday. Don't delay. Turbocharge your generational wealth today. Join us at stsplus.com or stsconsultation.com for a live call with more info on Short-Term Shop Plus.
So how much does that one gross a year, would you say, ish?
Well, before, after the property manager.
Well, I think now's a great time to get into that. So how much, let's talk about what it did with the property manager, how you realized this wasn't going well, and then what you've been able to do without him.
So I'd say I still have room to improve for sure, just because it's been a learn. I took it over last year and it's been a huge learning curve for me. Definitely worthwhile though. But that house to own and operate cost us $1,000 a month, which is incredible.
Wow.
And it probably for 6 months out of the year makes, you know, $7,000 to $12,000 a month after the property manager. And in the regular off season, we put a midterm renter in there because it's like winter here, you're not going to get much. So we put a midterm renter in there that pays us more than double what it costs to own. So before the property manager, with the property manager, we were probably making like 40,000. And I think this year we're at 75.
Okay. And so, 200 purchase price grosses 75 a year, or give or take, you're new to it. After the property manager, how much did you have to put into getting it up and running?
$35,000.
Oh, that's not bad. But wow, those are great numbers.
It was such a blessing and really opened up my eyes to the potential of short-term rentals. And then on the second one, same thing. We had a property manager. We just recently fired them, so I'm taking that over. But what happened was that house on the water that cost $605,000. That one, they had made us like $45,000 last year. Yeah.
And so that would have been negative cash flow?
Oh, yeah. The other one was offsetting it. The appreciation did it. And they've really helped our taxes, our tax liability with flipping and my husband's W-2. So that's a whole nother story. But it's projected on AirDNA and Rabu to do like over $100,000. And the big box property manager got us 45 last year. So they were just too difficult to work with. And I'm like, I think I can do this better. So we just let them go pretty much 2 weeks ago.
Oh gosh.
I know, some work ahead of me.
So, okay. For people who might be in the same boat as you, how do you have that conversation when you're with a property manager and they're not doing a good job? how do you do that? Because that's really hard. My very first firing, I was 25 years old, firing a cleaner, our first cleaner, mm-hmm. who had been in the business for 25 years. So she thought I was some, you know, dumb 25-year-old bitch. Sorry, my mother has asked me not to curse on my podcast any longer. But sorry, Mom. But it was really tough because, you know, she thought I was a dumb kid and she'd been in the business for a long time, but she was taking advantage of us and I had caught her doing it several times. And it was so hard. Luke and I put it off and put it off. And we were on a long Sunday motorcycle ride back before kids when we could do things like that. And we stopped at a restaurant and he was like, okay, you go out in that parking lot and do not come back in here until you've done it. So I don't know about y'all, but that firing people is the absolute worst. So I would love to hear what your advice on that conversation is.
You know, what made this super easy is it was the same property manager, same company, but different like local managers on each property that we had. And I think the downside to this big property manager is what made them a bad manager is what made them easy to fire, because no one really cared. It was just a job. No one was vested in the success of your short-term rental. No one would take responsibility when there were issues. So when you fired them, it's almost like you weren't firing the property manager because she didn't care in the first place. You were just firing the company. And I don't even think they apologized. We tried to work with them over and over on different things. And there really is no personal buy-in for anyone to see that property succeed. They've gotten too big.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen that a number of times in other markets when they just get so big, it's their game is more volume than quality. And it definitely negatively affects the owners. And what would you say for people who might be in the same situation? What are some warning signs that you notice that maybe you should have acted sooner, or the first signs of like, okay, this isn't working?
Besides the income piece of it, right, to look back on the income and be like, man, there was a lot of money left here on the table. The quality of the property. So we would pop into our properties periodically, probably quarterly, and just stuff was broken or not maintained well. And really, the cleaner should have caught that. And the other thing is, while I didn't have control over the reviews, I could see the reviews on their platform, Airbnb or whatever. And they just weren't good. So the guest experience was lacking. The maintenance of the house was lacking. Their communication was, I mean, it was just across the board. So probably the first thing that started to slip were some of the reviews would come back. And then I would call them and be like, guys, it matters. The guest experience and the reviews matter. What's happening here? But it's just no one takes ownership over the quality of the guest experience. So it was fragile from the beginning. It was probably that early on.
So how has the transition been from having it with a property manager to transitioning to self-management?
So much learning technology-wise, so much learning just with the different platforms, you know, and all the systems, because I do need to have it pretty streamlined for it to go. I do want it to run really well and I want it to be good for guests and I want it to be easier for me. So putting like, you know, Hospitable and Turno and Price Labs and all that, and having them talk to each other and making sure, you know, guest communication is good and everybody has what they need. So it's a little daunting in the beginning. But I did it with the last one and I just did it. I'm going through the process with this one. So it's a lot, but it's really, and you probably know this very well, once you have it set up, you're kind of smooth sailing. It's just that initial period of getting it set up and having it set up right, so that you can, you know, there's extra keys if the lock doesn't work and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So what would you say was the hardest part of that transition?
So they supplied all the linens, right? And so we had to go through and we found a cleaner on Turno, but then you have to go through interview process and then you go through getting all of those linens and restocking the house, and not just linens, like all the shampoos and this and that. So kind of like we went down for 3 nights and just, it was a lot of work to get it back up to rent ready to make sure it's a good guest experience. So that's probably the most difficult. And then just really knowing those online platform systems. And I had such a hard time with this. I actually put together an ebook as I was doing it step by step, because I oftentimes get people that ask me, like, how do you do this? So as I was going through it this past time, I was like writing it down. This is how you do it. So hopefully it'll be easier for me and then people that want to know too after this.
So what is next here? So you've got these two transitioned over to self-management. You've got your flipping business still going. What's your goal? I guess we're at the end of the year for 2024 when we're recording this. So what's your goal for 2025?
I know, super exciting. So I love what you guys do. So actually, so in 2025, we're looking, our flipping business at this point is almost on autopilot, which is a beautiful thing. We've kind of set it up and our contractors know their role, and once we find the deals, they get going. So that's great. And then have these two properties set up really well, so the guest experience is good. Going forward, we're actually buying a business this year that I can't talk too much about yet because of all the legal stuff, but it's a huge 10X jump for us. And it has to do with property design, and it will be, it'll mesh well in with the flips and the Airbnbs going forward. We're super excited about that. But it's going to put us in a place where we have more cash from our flips and this business that we're going to need to invest into short-term rentals. So we're really looking in 2025 to grow that portfolio. And it's kind of the flip of what you said earlier, where it's, because I used to think like you think, like, don't invest where you want to vacation, invest where you're going to make money. So now that we have these two places that we do invest in that are where we want to vacation, I'm going to be leaning into the short-term shop and all the experienced agents that you guys have, and hopefully finding more of those properties that really do heavily cash flow as a place to park these profits, get them set up, and then, you know, use them as a great tax deduction because we're going to need that, and just something that generates that extra income. So that's my 2025 goal, more short-term rentals.
What markets do you have your eyes on?
Oh man, I would love to buy in Florida. That was actually my original plan before we bought our first flip. I was like, we're going to buy a house in Florida because we would love to use that. And we still haven't done that yet. So market-wise, something. So what we deal with is seasonality up here. No one's going, typically no one's going to the beach in the middle of the winter. So I'd like to hedge that a little bit with areas that have more of a four-season appeal, whether that be the Poconos, or somewhere in Florida, that's really, or Arizona, whatever. I would lean into you because I do think that the agents that have short-term rental experience are significant. You know, they're not, everyone's created equal, and I would lean into the expertise on that.
I would like you to say that one more time, a little bit louder for the people in the back.
I mean, truly, truly, though, what you guys have created is such an asset, and I am so looking forward to learning more about that this year and utilizing your services more because it's so valuable. And what you've learned with scaling, right, is it's worth paying people to do the job that they're really good at.
I agree. And Arizona would nicely complement your seasonality, or South Florida. Like here in the panhandle, our winter season is dead too. So if you're trying to find opposite seasonality of what you have, I'd go South Florida or Arizona. But all great things. It all sounds awesome. Your story is so inspiring. I love it. And before I get to that, I almost forgot the final three questions of the show. So we're to the final three questions of the show. First question is, what advice would you have for 20-year-old Laura?
Oh, yeah. Do it. Surround yourself with people that know more than you do, and that the real estate investor community is incredible. Once they know and they've opened up this world, they want to share it with you. They want to see you win. So put a little work in, you know, be around people and just believe in yourself because, man, big things can happen.
Great advice. And what advice, very similar question, what advice would you give a new investor who's looking to get started today, end of 2024?
Oh yeah, do it. So One foot in front of the other. You don't have to have every answer. You just have to make the next step, surround yourself with people that can help you succeed in that step, and keep going one foot in front of the other. And big things happen pretty quick.
Very good advice. And you've already talked about Rich Dad, Poor Dad, so you can't say that one for this next question. What is your favorite book that's impacted your mindset?
Oh, this year, and it's true, is 10x is easier than 2x. We're about to make the biggest jump that I never saw coming in my entire career that has the potential to really just change our trajectory. And I am so excited. And that book really inspired me to do it.
Awesome. Great recommendation. And we'll have to have you back on after you get transitioned into owning this new company. I want to hear all about it.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Laura, if our listeners want to find you and follow you, how can they do that?
I am at sides_investing on Instagram.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on. We'll catch you later.
Thanks for having me.